We're all familiar with the narrative by now. A young Jew, typically between 18 and 35 years of age, often a day school or Jewish summer camp grad, announces themselves as a member of the anti-Israel crowd via social media posts or through conversations with family or friends. Perhaps they don't even fully announce it, cognizant of the backlash they'll receive from their childhood communities. More often than not, these are not the people wearing masks and keffiyehs and harassing Jews on the streets. More often than not, they strongly identify as Jewish, but without any connection to Israel, which sounds like a contradiction to us, but isn't to them. Usually, this specific kind of anti-Israel Jew is of Ashkenazi descent. They are at least second-generation American, usually third or more. They were raised conservative or reform, and are not particularly observant now. They are not meaningfully connected to Jewish life in their day-to-day activities. They don't go to temple, they are not involved in any communal programs or on any Jewish boards or connected to legacy Jewish organizations. They don't have children. They do have strong Jewish roots. They are Jewishly literate. They know the holidays, the prayers, the songs, the customs. They were born bat mitzvah, had Jewish wedding ceremonies. They've likely never been to Israel or have only been with family or as a student, and usually not very recently. To categorize these folks as anti-Jewish or self-hating is to misunderstand them entirely, to participate in the same binary, polarized thinking being weaponized so effectively against mainstream Jews by our enemies. You're either pro-Israel or a self-hating anti-Semite. As usual, the truth is much more nuanced. Allow me to illustrate the reality with a concrete example. The 2022 hit song Pink Pony Club by avowed anti-Israel recording artist Chapel Roan, both because it's an apt parallel and because it's been stuck in my head for 3 years. It tells the story of a young, free-spirited, queer Gen Zer who leaves behind her traditional Tennessee upbringing, which she still openly loves and thinks of all the time, to join the world of the Pink Pony Club, a special place where everyone's a queen every single day. It's where she belongs. In this scenario, Tennessee is the childhood Jewish community of our young anti-Israelers. It represents their parents, teachers, synagogues, family, friends. This is a community with whom they share bonds of love and history, but also one they left some time ago and no longer have any engagement with on a day-to-day basis. Not out of shame or spite or any fault of the hometown, but simply because it's not the Pink Pony Club. It's no longer their core community. It's no longer where they belong, and there's nothing inherently wrong or malicious about that. The Pink Pony Club represents the leftist, progressive community in which they have been building their adult lives. We love to use the term echo chamber, with its decidedly negative connotation, to describe folks who surround themselves entirely with people who act and think as they do. But in practice, if we're being real, another way to say echo chamber is friend group or community. Most of society functions this way. You're not a sheep or an idiot because you and your friends have the same values, priorities, ideas, or approaches. If your friends are going out to a restaurant, are you a sheep for also going there because you enjoy doing what your friends do and trust they picked somewhere good that takes into account your likes and dislikes? As usual, when there's discord and misunderstanding, it means we aren't talking to each other. We aren't asking questions and listening to the answers. Instead, we're making assumptions from our own viewpoint rather than discovering the truth of theirs. And the truth is that though anti-Israel Jews are obviously viewed as an extreme fringe minority within the mainstream Jewish world, aka Tennessee, that world is not of great importance to the Pink Pony Clubbers anymore. Who matters to them are the girls and boys inside the club, their true community. And within this circle, they're actually the majority. So when mainstream Jews wonder how these young folks are standing against their own community, remember, they aren't. Your community is not their community anymore. And herein lies the actual problem. One that it's too late to solve at scale for this current crop of kiddos, but must be urgently corrected for the generation just behind them and forevermore. Other than the profile I've already outlined, two other things need to be true for these specific kinds of anti-Israel Jews to exist. The first is that they must already be estranged from the day-to-day life of the mainstream Jewish community. If there's nothing Jewish about you except the way you were raised, that's basically the same as being born in Oklahoma and living in Japan. It's where you came from, it's a part of you, and it always will be. But it has very little to do with how you spend your time, prioritize your life, or move throughout the world. The second condition, and in a way these two are linked, is that to be an anti-Israel Jew, you must, by default, be uneducated about what Jews are, what Israel means to Jews, and the reality of life on the ground in Israel. Any person of any stripe who is well-educated in these three areas cannot possibly be anti-Israel. They can be anti the current government, as a huge number of both diaspora and Israeli Jews certainly are. But when you have all the facts, you cannot possibly remain anti the entire country in the face of them, unless you truly are an anti-Jew racist who wants to see us destroyed, which, as we've already established, is not usually the MO for this particular group of Jews. Now, you might be wondering, if these Jews are not actively connected to the community, and only know about this conflict through cherry-picked facts and the privileged lens of assimilated American Jewish culture, why are they saying anything on this topic at all? And it's the right question to ask. The answer is exactly what I discussed in my monologue two episodes ago. Contemporary society and the pervasiveness of social media have given people the false notion that they are both obligated and entitled to weigh in on the topics of the day, regardless of their capacity to meaningfully do so. In other words, people who, as we've established, know little about Israel and are not actively connected to the mainstream Jewish community feel a social responsibility to weigh in on the former as representatives of the latter. And with this microphone thrust upon them and no ability to engage on the topic in a deep or nuanced way, they find themselves backed into a corner. Pick a side. They know they can't possibly be on the side of the group that's killing Gazan children on their TikTok feeds, so that must mean they're on the other side. It's the binary trap. Even if they believe, as many of these anti-Zionists do, that Israel actually does deserve its own sovereign state, which would in fact make them Zionists, but tomato, tomato, they still consider themselves part of the anti-Israel camp because they can't possibly be pro if pro means being on the side of the army that's bombing babies. We've talked about this 100 times on the show. People with no grip of the subject dumping their low information opinions into the public sphere with seemingly no desire to get it right, which is precisely the case here. These are folks with no skin in the game. So there's no incentive for them to take the time and effort required to actually get it right. In their circles, they're already right. And to do the extra homework takes intention and effort that they simply don't care enough to put in. If they did, they would have already done it in the first place. A year ago, I met with some folks from Search for Common Ground, a global conflict resolution organization actually on the ground with key stakeholders working on geopolitical stalemates like this all around the world. The idea that stuck with me from that meeting was that it's always the people who are the least involved, the least touched by a conflict, who formed the most rigid opinions and are the least helpful in bringing the conflict to an end. Think about that. Those are our well-meaning but woefully misguided anti-Israel Jews. They remind me of Tom and Daisy Buchanan from the classic novel The Great Gatsby. Careless people. Careless people who smash things and then retreat into their carelessness and let other people clean up the mess they made. It's maddening. It's dangerous. It's irresponsible. It's shameful. But it isn't nefarious. It isn't Jew hatred. It isn't self-hatred. And it honestly isn't that difficult to understand. These are disconnected, uneducated people surrounded by like-minded peers, all reinforcing one another in their disconnected, uneducated worldviews that they're not all that concerned with anyway and are only focused on because progressive society says they're supposed to be. So what do we do about it? Well, we deal with the present and we deal with the future. For the present, we need to stop being hypocrites. You don't want to be painted as a baby killer just because you're a Jew who supports Israel. Don't paint every anti-Israel Jew as a self-hating Hamas supporter because they don't like seeing children starve or get crushed by buildings. We need to talk to the anti-Israel Jews in our lives, using my 4 C's of difficult conversation, of course, which you can find in episode 6 if you're new here. Communication leads to understanding, and with understanding, there's at least room to breathe, to be connected, room for love and respect. The changing of the minds part, if it happens at all, can only happen once there is mutual respect, trust, and understanding. You need to pave the road first before anybody can meet you on it. As for the future, we need to deal with this problem a few clicks upstream. The problem isn't that disconnected, uneducated Jews are turning against Israel. The problem is that we're failing to stop our children from becoming disconnected, uneducated Jews. The onus falls on both the parents and our Jewish institutions. Jewish children must understand that we are a people, an ancient tribe, for whom religion is but one facet of all we share. It's much harder to disconnect from your family than it is from your shul. Jewish children must know that Jews are not rich white Europeans, but that the world is full of Jews of all colors and countries and socioeconomic backgrounds, and even the ones who present as white do so conditionally. Jewish teens must know the history of our people, not just the Bible and not just the Holocaust, but everything else in between. They must understand that they live on a point on a long line of resilience in the face of unceasing persecution. They must know what happened to us in England and France and Spain and Russia and North America. They must know the ins and outs of 48 and 67 and the fall of the Shah and the Farhud and the Intifadas and every other pivotal moment in Israeli history from all angles. If all we're teaching them is holidays, songs, and Tikkun Olam, we can't be surprised when the only things they know about being Jewish are holidays, songs, and Tikkun Olam. We can fix this. We have to fix this. And we will. If there's one thing Jews know how to do, it's endure. And so we beat on, boats against the current. But we always find a way. This is the 35th episode of Being Jewish with me, Jonah Platt. Hey, Jewish people, my guest today is all about putting smiles on people's faces, putting delicious food into his. He's a rising star in the social media world with 500,000 followers who all tune in to be part of the multicultural community he's building through his unique blend of humor, earnestness, and 11 secret herbs and spices. He is the epitome of an ally who not only lifts up other communities, but stands up for them too, especially ours in this difficult time when fellowship means so much. Started from the babka, now he's here. Please welcome the babka king himself, Chris Kersnan.
What's up, brother?
Welcome,
that's a hell
dude.
Of an intro.
Thank you. I try to do my best.
That was a good intro. Thank you, man, for saying
sure.
that.
Sure. I feel like this is the black and white cookie the world needs right now.
Is that how it was started, the black and white cookie?
What?
Like blacks and white people?
No.
But
it's like chocolate and vanilla.
Okay.
All right. So this is not going to be an ordinary episode of Being Jewish because I don't have just an ordinary guest here. I got the babka king. So we're going to do a little Chris-style food tasting as we go.
Okay.
And I'm going to show you some of LA's most delicious Jewish foods. I'm an Angelino. I'm born and raised. Got a lot of pride for this city. I think LA is the best food city in the world.
Mm.
You know, I'm putting that down there.
Mm.
You know, because we
got
a
lot of places that'll fight with that.
I know, but we got everything. We have every ethnicity, every geographic representation. Like, everybody who's good comes here and makes their thing here.
So Makes sense.
You know? So we're going to start off, and our intern Sasha and our EP Matthew are going to come on in with some delicious-looking Bereka plates.
Okay.
Thanks, y'all. These are from our friends at Bereka Sephardic Pastries in Sherman Oaks, Chef Uzi Wisman and Gal Ben-Goya. And we got two different kinds. So you're holding, you got the potato filling, which is like classic Bereka. And then they also do a cheese and spinach, which is like the fan favorite. These Berekas came from a Turkish pastry called a Berek, which means to twist. And Turkish nomads spread them all over the Ottoman Empire. So that's why you have people do their own version of this.
Yeah.
Asia, Middle East, North Africa. And the Sephardic version, Bereka, is sort of a mix between the Berek and an empanada. So they like sort of filled it up and closed it out, less of the twist, because
yep.
I got that Spanish heritage. And it's now like a staple of Israeli cuisine, because all the different people who ended up in Israel are eating this thing. So let's give it a taste. Which one are you starting with?
I'm going to go spinach.
Spinach, let's do it.
Hold on.
This is about to be an ASMR show.
All right, you said the first one was potato?
Yeah, potato and brown butter.
Okay, that sounds fire. So let's do this. All right, I'm going to do this.
Mm.
That sauce is fire.
Mm. Wow, I didn't think I was going to like this potato one as much as I did. But this is really good.
I think I might like it better.
Mm-hmm. That is delicious.
It actually really is good, bro.
Growing up at my Jewish sleepaway camp, they would give us Berekas
and they were terrible. And I didn't want to eat them at all because they were gross. Like, these are so much flakier. The filling is so good. Like, this is definitely the best burek I've ever had.
It actually really is good. Like, no joke. What's that place called again?
Bereka's Sephardic Pastries.
What?
Out in the valley. Legit.
All right.
All right.
Hey, Babka King approved, y'all. It's good.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'll be honest. I like the potato one better. They're both good.
So how'd you get into this whole thing, this food game, the Babka King, all of that?
So I do have to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
What started, I heard a quote once.
Okay.
Don't create the content, be the content.
People connect to the authenticity. That's like the number one thing they tell you to
That's
do
That's like
online,
my
you
whole
know?
Thing, bro.
Yeah.
So I've always just been kind of like showing my personality and things that I'm talking about, what I'm working on. So you can go back, like if you went through my social media, you could tell what my focus in life was. Even in the podcast, like in the beginning, it was just cause, and then it turned into entrepreneurship, then it turned into social anxiety, like, and it just, I'm just, be the content.
Right.
One day, randomly, driving DoorDash, I stopped and I looked at my phone and I had, I said, hey, white people. That's how I started. And mind you, I've been around a ton of whites my whole life. I grew up in a very white area. And I said,
how long y'all gonna hold out on the fact that apples and cheese is a good combination?
So I made this video and it did well. And one thing about social media is when you find something that clicks, you attack that thing, that idea. So then the comments actually gave me the content. So they're like, oh, you think that's good? Wait till you try this.
Oh.
So then I said, okay, I'll try that. And then I just kept doing those things. Then it was a lot of white people content in the beginning. So then I said, well, let me switch it up. What can I do? And then I went to like Mexicans, right? Because I live in a very predominantly Mexican area now. And I said, hey, Mexican people. And then that picked up steam. And then I just did all these different cultures. And I'll be honest, in the beginning, I didn't want to feel like I was pandering. So that was like, I think the way to not feel like I'm pandering is to do all the cultures. That's to do everybody.
Right.
Have fun with it and learn. Again, be the content. I think I've always said this. My perfect life would be to just travel the world, talk to cool people, and try cool shit. And it got accomplished, which is crazy.
Yeah, you're
doing
it.
I've always said that. Like, that's what I want to do. I didn't make any Jewish content for like 7 months. There was no reason. I just, it didn't come top of mind until a buddy was like, dude, come to this place. I think it's called Max and Beanie or something about House of Jewish Deli. So we went there and we had krepla.
What's in this?
You got matzo ball, you got krepla, you got actual chicken.
And I had that chocolate phosphate drink. And it was a great time, right?
Those are hit and miss for me, the halva. Sometimes I think it's
delicious.
I've heard
that from a lot of people.
Sometimes it depends how it's made.
You know what's funny? We'll circle back, but people always tell me, does you like everything? Because like, well, first of all, I was 417 pounds. I like food.
When
like,
were you 417
I'd say
pounds?
12, 13, 14 years ago.
Damn.
And lost 175 pounds.
Wow.
So yes, I like a lot of food. Right?
Yeah.
Clearly, you probably like a lot of food if you get that heavy.
I know you're getting a lot of love from a lot of different people. What kind of messages mean the most?
Believe it or not, the Jewish ones, man, because I guess I didn't realize the effect because I'm like, I'm just trying babka. Like, somebody sent me something, I liked it. Like, honestly, it was so, this whole thing is so organic.
Yeah.
And there's so many people from rabbis to famous people to the regular Joe Schmo who's like, dude, thank you. Like, genuinely. Mm-hmm. No, don't want anything. You know how many times I've never reached out to anybody before online. I get that like 30 times a day now.
Wow.
And I literally only tried the food and said it was good. I didn't say these people are better than those people. I didn't say, I just said this food is good. Like I do all the cultures, right?
Sure.
And it's just kind of interesting that I did that and the Jewish culture was like, we're gonna ride with them because I only showed love to the food, which means that what you guys are going through is clearly a thing.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if I was like, you know, pro Israel and everything. That all I did was say, damn, the Barakas are awesome.
Right.
And then I got that death threat. And I'll be honest, I was a little like thrown back because I never got something like that.
Like a real one or just like
No. They found my, not even my business address, or they found my personal email and sent some of the craziest things I've ever heard.
Damn.
I remember thinking like, am I gonna die over talking about babka? Like, seriously.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it, I said, you know what, man? This this is your double down moment, I feel like. Like, this is, so my favorite quote in the history of reality is, or my top two is, the treasure you seek is inside the cave you're afraid to enter. Mm. And so whenever I feel like a little fear,
yeah,
it's like that seems like that's the sign.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I think of that in terms of like the hard thing to do is usually the right thing to do.
100%.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to double down. In my whole life, bro, my whole life since I was a kid, I've been that way. I'm the kind of person who I feel like it's my, like I used to bully the bullies in high school. Because I was a big dude. And, you know, I was the prom king. People liked me. So like I didn't bully people unless I saw you bullying someone. Like, come mess with me. And I was 400 pounds. No one was messing with me.
Yeah. Sounds to me like you're a leader. I mean, that's what that sounds like. You know, when there's a space to be filled, you say, okay, I'm going to go fill it.
You know, my teachers used to always say I was a class clown, right? Used to class clown a lot. And I'd be in, my grandmother. They'd be like, you know what? Chris is, the class follows him. If he's not being disruptive, then the class isn't being disruptive.
I was the same way, man. I used to get in trouble all the time because someone else would be doing something. And I'd be like, why am I in trouble? They're like, you started this. And you're a kid. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
But they feed off your energy when you're the leader and... You know, that's something you got to learn. And I learned from a young age that we can really have a powerful effect on the people around us, whether we know it or not.
And it's kind of reflects back to what's going on now, because I don't feel like I'm doing anything. People calling me a hero and say, what do you mean a hero? I'm just being Chris. Yep. I'm trying babka. To me, it's not a hero thing to do. And it's weird how it's become that, which makes me feel like that's why it's natural. It don't even feel like I'm doing anything.
Yeah.
I go around and have conversations, try cool shit.
Yeah. What do you think that says about the Jewish community and like how things are right now? The fact that you eating babka makes you a hero.
It is very interesting that I literally just tried their food and they took that as a culture to say like, thank you for not being a dick, right? Essentially, right? And listen, all the cultures show me love, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it was overwhelmingly, and a lot of times it's the... Since October 7th, I've been fear. I'm scared to tell people I'm Jewish. I'm like, damn. And I'm sitting here, you got this black dude, not Jewish, who's just proudly like, yeah, the babka's dope, who calls himself the babka king. But to me, it wasn't like a scary thing. Right. I grew up in the North Shore, which is, I learned, is one of the top five biggest Jewish populations in the country.
I was just there on Monday. I was in Glencoe.
Yep, I know the area very well.
That's down. You grew up in Wheeling?
Yeah, but like Deerfield, Buffalo Grove, all that.
Yeah.
Highland
Park.
Yep. The one thing about Wheeling, I would say, is it was more diverse than a lot of the other schools. I mean, we had Indians, Blacks, Whites, Mexican, Jews. Like it was out of all the neighboring schools, I felt like we were one of the most mixed. And I'll be honest, man, how I thought about America, how I've always envisioned it from stories and books, is it was a melting pot.
Yeah.
I thought that that's what the whole America thing was. Like, we're the giant melting pot.
Totally.
And it's just kind of interesting that like, it seems like the half of the country is like, eh. Mm. You know, it's kind of like, I'm like, damn, that's just not what I believe.
And you go over to that side of the pot.
The golden rule, right? Treat people how you want to be treated. Like me. Don't look at me for being a black dude. Look at me for being Chris. Yeah. Am I cool or not? And I'm going to bet on me that you'll probably think I'm cool.
Yeah.
Right? As long as you don't have preconceived notions about what you think, right?
Yeah.
So that's the answer to that question.
And I know growing up, you had a difficult family situation. Your mom died young. How old were you?
14.
Okay. So not little, but...
Not little, but
young. But young.
But to be fair, my grandmother raised me little.
I know, yeah. And your dad was not present.
0%.
0%. Have you seen him since?
Don't even know his name.
Don't even know his name.
I would say that my upbringing was tough when you think about it from the perspective of like everyone else. Now I look at it as the best thing that's ever happened.
In what way?
Because it gave me like resilience of life early, right? Yeah. So I got to feel some shit early.
Yeah, and you got through it. You go, I can get through this. 100%
of them.
Yeah.
There's nothing, as a matter of fact, I always, like, so I do public speaking.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in my speech, I always say like, well, think about every time. I'm gonna ask you.
Yeah, yeah.
In your life, every time you've ever been like, oh no, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
You survived 100% of those.
Exactly.
And I know that for a fact because you're talking to me now. Right. Now, that don't mean you didn't have to feel it a little bit. Like, you don't feel life, right? You had to sleep in your car for a little while. Maybe you got arrested. But you survived it. So that gives me a lot of like, ease going forward, once I realized, like, damn, I am. Like, first of all, humans in general are pretty overall resilient.
Yeah.
Like, we're just a resilient species on this planet. But then, like, personally, damn, I overcame a lot. And, you know, so I got diagnosed, right, in 2021 with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. So for 3 days, all I hear is, what? Lou what? Like, yeah. Lou what? And all I heard was the C word, cancer, right?
Sure.
And so for 3 days, bro. And to me, this is actually the sauce, man. This is the sauce because in those 3 days when I thought I was dead, 100%, right. You know what I was not thinking about? Money.
Right.
Fame. Girls. Clothes. None of that shit. Not even family, honestly. You know what I was really thinking about? Just not being here. Like, damn, I'm gonna miss this thing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna miss this thing called like life. You know, like, I don't know. And then when they were like, the doctor's like, come on in, I gotta tell you some stuff. So this is during the COVID time, so you couldn't have no one come in. So my buddy Steve was on the speakerphone.
Just for support with you. I mean, you must be terrified.
Horrid, right?
Yeah.
So then he's like, so I think I know what you got. You don't have to do it. We don't have to do this. We don't have to do that. I think you have something called CLL. I'm pretty for sure. I'm like, okay, what the hell is that?
Right.
And he's like, it's a very slow moving cancer of the blood. I'm like, okay, but you're good. We got all kind of medicine. The medicine's dope and it's improving every 6 months. So I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. I'm like, so I said, clear cut. Am I going to live? He goes, you're going to live. The feeling, bro. And I'll never forget. So finally, after I go downstairs, Steve is waiting in the car. I'm like, I'll never forget that feeling. And we were like both crying. He's hugging me. Like, you know, he was also there when I lost my mom, too. That's why this guy's my.
Yeah, he's your ride or die.
So he was next to me when I heard my mom died. So then, and then the hug. You know how guys can get weird about hugs and stuff. No, man. He let me give him the whole energy. Yeah, yeah. And for like 20 minutes. And I'm sobbing, and he was there, so he's always there. He always shows up, you know. Mm. And to circle back, I take that shit serious because of these kind of things. So like, if you're in, you're in. So like, even like the Jewish community, y'all we in now. To, you know, y'all showing me love. I'm gonna show it back.
All right, that seems like a good place to take a little break, get a little more food.
Let's do it.
So I know you've had shawarma before. Well, this is special. This is unlike any shawarma you've had. This is from our friends at Avi Q in Studio City, from Chef Aviad Yalin. This is Wagyu shawarma. Yeah, I think they use Australian Wagyu.
My bad.
Yeah, man. So a little background for those who don't know. Shawarma, it's another Turkish origin kind of food, like the burekas. It comes from the Turkish word çevirme, which means to turn. Because it's on that spit,
oh, yeah,
and that's how
yeah.
you make it. You turn it around. It's all over the Middle East.
You know, it's ironic because somebody followed me today, and I followed him. I think it's Kevin Hamilton, black Jewish guy. He's like, dude.
Kenny Hamilton. He's been on this show.
Kenny
was my third guest.
From around
Kenny.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay, so he hit me up randomly, and he goes.
Shout out to Kenny.
Yeah, shout out to you. He goes, dude. Trust me, go to this place.
Yep.
And I was like, all right, because I'm leaving in the morning. I'm like, all right, I was like, I gotta go. He goes, trust me. He goes, I'm a black Jew.
Yeah.
That's what he says. He goes, trust me, go there. And then it was just ironic that y'all brought it in. So shout out to you,
hell
brother.
Yeah. And they do it simple. Like some shawarma places, they're putting all kinds of stuff. This is just tomato, parsley, onion, little tahini, that sesame sauce.
So it's like you like letting the meat do the talking.
Exactly. Okay. You got tahini on the side. You got soug on the side. It's like a Yemeni spicy sauce.
Okay.
So you can do a little dip in there. But,
have at it.
You know,
this looks crazy.
Yeah.
Insane.
The pita is so good, too. Really soft pita.
A little messy, but it's wow, that's good.
Shawarma's always messy.
Holy, so that wagyu, you can taste that.
Yeah.
It's different.
Mm-hmm. It's like a thicker cut of meat.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna get one more good bite.
No, take your time. I'll start talking, you can keep eating. Your real name is Chris Campbell. You become Chris Must Laugh first, was that what you said? Make Laugh. Now you're Chris Cares None. Where'd Cares None come from?
I told you, I started off with comedy sketches.
Right.
So at the end of each video, I would say, cares none. And that was like my way of saying, regardless of what you feel about this joke, I made it, cares none.
Right.
So it's essentially like, don't matter what you think. It has evolved since then. Because now how I look at it is, because it used to be like, I don't care what people think.
Right.
But the more soul searching I do, I think it's obvious I care a lot. I think I make it known. I think just my actions. I used to be called sensitive as a kid. And albeit, I agree now.
Yeah, you seem sensitive as an adult.
I heard a quote once that said, the trick to life is to love everyone while not giving a damn what they think. Mm. And I've been trying to like live my life and aim for that.
Yeah.
And you put yourself in a difficult game when you're on social media playing that game, right? Ever since I could remember, I have always felt like I should be on a stage. Like, so even like in eighth grade, or I think it was like the eighth grade talent show, like I went up and I remember being like kind of terrified. I did it. It was a great moment. All the lights. I loved it, right? And then life happens and I gained all the weight, and then you get the jokes and all this kind of stuff. And then I kind of started to like lose like confidence in myself. Mm. And then I came across something called exposure therapy.
Okay.
And it changed my life, bro.
That means you're just doing the thing that you don't want to be doing.
The treasure you seek is inside the cave you're afraid to enter, right?
That's right.
I'm like, oh, it makes sense. You got to feel it in order to do it. But even before that, logically, so there's something called the spotlight effect. And they studied this at Cornell University. And this changed the game for me. They studied this.
Okay.
So what it means is it's the tendency for people to overestimate how other people perceive them.
Oh, yeah. We always think people are thinking about us. No one's thinking about us. Think about yourself. You're always thinking about yourself. Everybody's thinking about themselves.
Until somebody says that and it clicks, it clicked. I'm like, that's a good point, man. We're all focused on everyone looking at us. So how could you be looking at me when you know you think I'm looking at you?
Right.
Like logically. Right. So then what I did, I said, okay, I now know what I got to do. So I did the exposure therapy. And I would literally, and I got this all on social media. And this is where I like first blew up. Doing like these, I would wear like crazy wigs and like very funky wigs, and I'd put mustard on my beard and mayonnaise. Like I would just do crazy stuff, googly eyes. I would go to the pump on gas tank and ask for like $1.15 on pump one with googly eyes. And the guy would be like, are you being serious? I'm like, yep.
And what's the exercise there? Just like making a fool out of yourself
to
publicly?
Feel comfortable. Right.
And being
perceived,
uncomfortable stuff.
Right. Because I'm an extreme guy. So then what would happen is I would realize in the like I would be editing the clip and people would walk by and then no one's looking.
Right.
You think they're looking. No one, they don't even know you exist. Yeah. They don't even know you exist.
They're going to their appointment. You know, that's what they're
thinking.
I'll
give you another example. I was sitting there one day, this back when I was a big boy, bigger boy, and I'm eating chicken wings at the Jewel Osco. Shout out to Jewel, great wings. They got great wings. They call them wing zings or something, really good. And I'm sitting there parked on like my lunch break, eating chicken, right? Doing my thing, which is already just hilarious. This is black dude eating chicken in the car.
You're filming yourself?
No, I'm just eating on for lunch.
Okay.
And then a lady pulls next to me, right? And I remember feeling like, I don't want her to see me eating these wings. I don't know why, that was just the feeling I had. So like in hindsight, it's crazy that like that my brain went there because like number one, human beings eat. It's not weird, right? But I felt like it was weird.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of people who really relate to that story.
Oh, I know for a fact.
Yeah.
Because people are going to see, because that's, so I kept putting myself in that idea, that thought, I just keep doing that. And then I kept doing the content and then I kind of overcame it.
Yeah. I you and I are similar in a lot of ways. For me, it wasn't social anxiety. It was ADHD. And when I got diagnosed as an adult, and like understanding what that meant for me unlocked all this stuff. And I was able to start dealing with it in a way that was, I could work with it and use it to my advantage or understand where it wasn't working
for me.
Give
me an example.
So like here's a phrase that's really changed the way that I think about ADHD. ADHD is not people who don't know how to pay attention. It's people whose brains have a hard time choosing what to pay attention to.
Mm.
So like last night, I'm trying to work on the outline for this show and my wife watches TV to go to bed. Next thing I know, I've been like watching Grey's Anatomy for an hour.
Oh.
And because when it's on, I have a hard time doing both of them at the same time. But I know that about myself, so I can be like, all right, I got to shut this off so that I can do this thing.
Now, is that like a chemical thing in the brain or is that the way we live in our lives on the phone?
No, it's a brain thing. It's our brains don't produce the same amount of dopamine. So we like are it's something about like searching for dopamine in ways that the regular brain doesn't have to. So like your brain, if you're looking at something, even if it's boring, your brain is going to be releasing dopamine, which like rewards you for staying and paying attention to it. My brain isn't giving that dopamine, so I'm not getting the chemical reward for being there. So I'm looking for something else that's got the dopamine. So
that actually works. That makes it make sense. I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but then once I realized
that curable?
It's not curable. Like you can't get rid of it, but you can take different medicines that like affect different parts of it. And then the big thing is like learning behavioral things. It's mostly behavioral. Like I know that if I'm doing something that's out of routine, I need to bring this package to UPS, which I don't do that every day. If I don't leave it right by the door where I can see it, I'm never going to remember to bring it with me. I have to see it on the way because I'm going to forget.
All right, brother.
Your hat, be dope. That's a saying of yours. It's the merch. What does that mean?
To me, I'd rather live in a world where everything feels awesome, right? Some people are like, well, that's not realistic. This whole idea about being realistic. And it always kind of threw me for a loop. And I understand what you're saying. But think about it. If you would have asked them or told somebody 2,000 years ago, dude, one day you're going to have a thing in your pocket that you can talk to anyone real time across the world or on the moon. They would have been like, dude, that's not realistic. That's crazy.
Right.
Or you're going to be able to get into this silver tube and fly anywhere within 15 hours. Back in 2,000 years ago, they'd have been like, that's not realistic.
You're going to be able to drink water that doesn't kill you.
All kind of stuff, right? All kind of stuff. So it's like, man, so to me, I think about that when someone tells me like something, you're not being realistic, which actually goes to my third favorite quote. So that's we've done the first two, is my third one. Shout out to my grandmother.
Planned it.
Let me tell you the story. I was a sweet kid, very adorable.
Dude, when you tried babka for the first time in that video, like you look like a child.
Oh, it was
on,
that
like,
good.
Christmas
it
morning.
Was so
your
good.
Face like lights up like a I little think that's kid. Why that's what hit. I thought when you were eating.
Yeah. You know, at least I was told I was adorable. So I used to always say, man, I can't do that, man. Even if it wasn't bad, she'd be like, oh, go play with those kids. Like, oh, I can't. Like, go pick this up. I can't. And I guess I must have said, I can't, one too many times. And my grandmother was pissed. She goes, you know what? That's it. She gave me a pen, gave me a piece of paper, and she made me write 100 times. I'm like 9. If you think you can't, no, I wasn't 9, probably like 12. If you think you can't, say you can. And I was pissed. I was so mad. I was so mad. Because as a child, I'm thinking, you're mad at me because I can't pick the box up? You're mad? Mm-hmm. I'm in trouble?
Not fair.
Right? That's what I'm thinking. And mind you, she's my grandmother, not my mom. I'm like, you're not even my mom. Mm-hmm. Like, I hit her because I was feeling it.
Yeah.
But she stayed strong. Nope. Don't care. Right. Finally, after calming me down and finishing it, she rewrote it in her very nice penmanship, right? And then she put it on my wall for like the next 8 years. It was, if you think you can't, say you can't. It was like the essence. So even if I didn't see it, it's the essence in my room, right? That's the energy of my room is you can accomplish it, right? You know what? I never had thought about it until that story came up about my grandmother making me write that. And I'm like, I had like this epiphany, like, oh, it's my grandmother in that specific moment because I don't think you can find anything online with me saying I can't do something.
Right.
I despise that shit. If you were like, as a matter of fact, let's say we're sitting here and we're talking about making social media content. And you're like, oh, I can't do that. Like my knee-jerk reaction to be like, okay, my filter goes in. I got to help this person believe that he can. Mm. And that's like my content. Like, and that's just who I am. I can't help it. Like, I'll be at a bar and like this guy just bombing with this girl, right? Just totally doing everything wrong. And I can't help myself to be like, dude, come here. I got you. And give him some game, right? I just feel like it's my job. And no one's told me to do that. It just feels right. And more often than not, no, sometimes it's not great. Some people are like, dude, I don't need your help. And I'm learning that, right? Mm. And maybe I'm kind of moving the goalposts a little bit, but what I'm learning now about helping is to just be the lighthouse, right? You shine the light, and then the people who are ready to see the light, they'll come. And if they crash, even though I was shining the light, that's on them. That's not on me. And to me, I would have wanted to get those people too. But that causes suffering inside of me. If I'm trying to put you on, and I know it's a need, but you're not there yet, not right or wrong, just your journey. And then I'm like, man, you're not getting it. And I would get frustrated. So now I'm teaching myself, still deal with it.
Sure.
Just be the lighthouse, bro. Be the lighthouse. Be the example, right? And just trust that. Bitte kon. Bitachon?
Yeah. What does that mean, bitachon? I forget.
Radical trust.
Ah.
Right? Knowing that God's got you regardless, right? You're where you're supposed to be. And like, man, I'm writing a book on that right now, actually, on radical trust and energy currents. But that's so true from my worldview is that, dude, just trust the moment. Because think about it from this perspective. What's more important than right now?
That's all there is.
Literally.
Yeah.
The past don't even exist.
Yeah.
The future don't even exist.
Yeah.
You know what exists? Right now. And that's where the sauce is. And you start meditating and doing all that kind of stuff. You start to and then when you think you're dead for 3 days, you realize, no, that really is a thing.
Yeah.
Because then I don't need nothing. Right? Because I'm already good. I'm good right now. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If I offered you no strings attached, do whatever you want.
Okay.
$1 million cash, tax-free, whatever you want. Would that be cool and would you accept it?
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Obviously.
To me. Yeah.
What if I said $100 million?
Great. Even better.
Now what if there was a caveat?
Okay.
$100 million. You're good. How about this? $1 trillion.
Okay.
But you can't wake up tomorrow. Would you take it?
No, of course not.
Why not?
What good is the money if you're not alive to use it?
So what you're saying is your life as is today is priceless.
That's right.
And we forget that. We be forgetting that shit. We forget that shit.
Yeah.
And I know, because I'm like, I felt the, like, no, it really is priceless.
Yeah.
Because when you think you're gone, that feeling is like really a thing.
Yep.
And I lead with that now. So like now my social anxiety is gone because I'm like, what could you say? Like, even if you're like, dude, I couldn't stand Chris, terrible podcast. It still don't accept, it still does not negate the fact that I would rather be alive. I'd rather you think that I sucked and still be alive than not.
All right, let's go into course three here. So we had the desayuno, we had the shawarma, and now we're gonna have a little dessert.
Let's go. Is it babka?
Can you read the second word for me?
Kehel.
Hey, okay, you know now. You know what the sounds are. So the little bow tie guy is called Kichel. These are from Bee's Bakery, also in the Valley. All three spots in the Valley. A lot of Jews and Israelis up in the Valley here in L.A. Been in L.A. since 1968. So the Kichel comes from the Yiddish word for kuchen, which means cake, and Kichel is like little cake. And it's kind of like shtetl food. You know the word shtetl?
Mm-hmm.
Like the small Jewish village kind of food where it's just eggs, flour, and sugar. So like real frugal. It's like if you didn't have milk, you didn't have butter, you could still make this. And it's parv. Do you know that word?
Yes. No meat.
No meat, no milk. Is parv.
Right, okay,
So then you can have it with whatever you're having. So there's no milk, no butter, actually in both of these. So this is parv. The second one is called, well now just for fun, let's see how you say it. It's not too hard, the bottom one.
Oh, Mandel bread.
Close. Mandel bread.
Oh, okay. A lot of people have told me to try this. So this will be the first time I've tried that for sure.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, so this is mandel bread, which comes from...
I wish I could say that right.
Close. You know, I was hoping you were going to say Mandel bread. Shout out to my cousins, the Mandels, actually.
Okay.
Take that one. It comes from the Yiddish for mandelbrot, which is almond bread. So it's like made with almond. They're sort of like... do you know what a cantucci is?
No.
Like, do you know biscotti?
Yes. It kind of looks like that.
So do you know what I learned? I was just in Italy. So biscotti just means like cookies in Italian.
Really?
Cantucci is actually like what we think biscotti are.
Really?
Yes. And
I've never known that.
They were like, do you want a cantucci? I was like, what are you talking about? That's a biscotti.
And so if I go to Italian joint and say I want a biscotti, they'll be like, what kind?
Which one? Yeah, yeah. So it's like a biscotti, but a little softer. That's why we got coffee with us, because it's going to be good with the coffee. They bake it twice, so it's like a little crispy. Always have almond, but sometimes they throw in like a cinnamon or a cranberry or whatever, all kinds of funky things.
Like a biscotti.
Like a biscotti.
Like a biscotti.
Yeah. So help yourself.
All right, okay. You got the coffee too.
You got the coffee and then you got the branded mugs. I know you like your
Folgers?
Coffee.
Is Folgers?
No, we got Intelligentsia, man.
And you're a dipper with these?
I'm dipping.
All right, let's see. Even kind of, it's like biscotti. I would have.
Yeah. A little softer.
It is softer. All right, so, these are light.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you dip these or you eat these and...
You can dip. It's less dippy than, like, it doesn't automatic dip, but it'll
work. I'm gonna try it first right now.
Yeah, yeah. It'll work.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I like that better than this Mondo.
Me too. I like the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like airy a little bit, but like not too airy. All right, you say it's not a great dipper, though, huh?
No. I think you can. It's like it's not like necessarily mushy? The natural dip, but it does work.
All right, let's see. I see what you're saying.
It's
like you can, but it's better to do it regularly.
Yeah, I think it's better by itself. This is like you would have this like a lot in synagogue at the end of like the Saturday Shabbat service. You would have like it's called a kiddush. It's like they do the blessing over the wine, and there's like some snacks and whatever. And this is where you might find a kickle these days.
You know, it's funny. I've been invited to maybe like 4,000 Shabbats. Like,
have you been seriously, to one?
I have not been to one
in your whole life.
I have been to a Passover though.
Wait, your whole
in
life?
A cedar. Never been to one. Never was invited.
If I didn't have to go to this wedding thing tonight, I would invite you to my house for okay. Shabbat. Right. Like, we got to get you to a Shabbat. Next time you're in town,
100%.
You got to promise me you're coming over for Shabbat. Love that.
Done.
Because Shabbat is, like, all about being present. That's why I feel you'd really like it. It's like,
dude,
you talk about preserving energy. Shabbat is literally, let's take a break from the week. If you're super observant, you're like, you turn off your electricity, you don't work, you turn everything off, and it's just about like slowing down, being together, making this day different from all the other days by chilling. The way that a friend of mine spoke about it once, shout out to David Suisa, is it's making time holy. And I just love that way of thinking about it, that like we're going to appreciate this time in the present because we have to every week. We have to make ourselves be present and sanctify.
Dude,
that time. I feel like it's right up your alley.
So
man.
I'm gonna talk about this from the non-Jewish perspective. I'm a Gentile, right?
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I am? I'm a Gentile.
That's right.
And the whole idea, I think all cultures should consider that practice.
Yeah.
Especially with the cell phone age.
Exactly.
Right? Like, so you mean to tell, and we all know this. We all know, everyone on earth knows that we're all hooked on these things. So to make it a priority.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, no. We're going to do that, everybody. I don't care, Jewish or not, mm-hmm. whether you like Jews or not, you could use that practice.
Yep.
So I'm all for, I do, you ever been to a float tank?
Yes, once.
Sensory deprivation.
Yep.
It's like the same principle, but that's only, but it's the same principle. You
for
unplug
an hour.
For an
yeah.
hour. And I know how great I feel after unplugging for an hour. So imagine unplugging every week for the day with your people.
With the people
how
you care
could that
about,
not
yeah.
be great?
Exactly. Where are you traveling to next? What's next on your agenda?
Yeah, I'm going to Israel.
No way!
Oh, yeah.
What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so there's a organization called Reality.
Yes, I know Reality, sure.
So they invited me.
Are you going
me
with like storytellers?
Yeah, the entertainers and influencer section. I just know me right now, being in Israel, is going to be one of the most like big energy shifts. It just feels right, right? It just feels like me being out there just feels right. And the amount of DMs and comments, we need to get you to Israel,
oh
right?
Oh, my God. They're going to be so psyched to see you there.
It was for Reality. But they were very ambiguous about exactly what it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then there was this mandatory Zoom call. The people who were there kind of talked to you about it. And then I asked the question, like, what are we doing here?
Right.
Like, what is the – are you trying to tell me a story from one specific lens? Because mm-hmm. – and I'll say this publicly, and I'll take what it is – I am not the Jewish guy. I am the humanity guy.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish people happen to rock with me heavy. You see what I'm saying?
Totally.
I'm never going to pick a side again. The side I'm picking is be versus humanity versus the aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm picking aliens. Or I'm the aliens. I'm picking the aliens. No, I'm going
get
with
out
the
here.
So that, and I want to make that every interview I do, every podcast I do, in any publications, I make that very clear. It's about humanity, period. It just so happens that it all worked out the way it's working.
Yeah.
And I'll show love all day, but I'm not a side picker.
You don't need to be.
And no one's made me, but good. I just know, like, and maybe this is my own fears and stuff, like optics and doing this. And then, like, if I make a Palestinian piece of content and you know what? I'm going to say it publicly. I can ask you a question in good faith.
Yeah.
So my whole thing is, like, building bridges.
Yeah.
Even when it's uncomfortable. I've made it very clear. I say it in a lot of my captions. If you rock with what I'm rocking with, you are at least a little bit okay with considering talking to someone who you might not like.
Mm-hmm.
You're at least, you might not be there, but let's see.
It's something you want. You're aspirationally there at least.
Yes. That you're like, I just want this stuff to stop, this energy, right? And obviously I understand what's going on with the conflict, right? It's big as hell, right?
Yeah.
So I also care about my Jewish community, but I also care about the Palestinians too.
Sure.
And it's funny because a lot of my DMs and Jewish people are saying, Chris, we don't want that. we want like good, like we don't want all this, right? And I get that a lot. So I'm like, okay, I know personally from what I'm hearing, like we don't, all of this stuff you see on TV, that's not how I feel.
Right.
I get a lot of that.
Yeah.
So here's my question to you. How would you feel knowing what you know of me, my content strategy, if I had wore, if I did like a babka and I'm like, same thing, but I'm wearing a hat with a Palestinian flag. How would that make you feel?
Interesting. That's a tricky question. If the video would be exactly the same.
Yep. I wouldn't even mention the flag at all. It would just be in there.
I mean, it would certainly color the way I would receive the video.
Knowing what you know of me, though.
Yeah, I mean, I would have questions, and I'd want to be like,
can you ask me those questions now?
Yeah, I'd be like, are you from Palestine? Is that why you're rocky? Are you trying to make a statement in this video?
I mean, it'd be the same reason why I'd wear the Israeli one. I wear an Israel flag in all my content, too. You know what I'm saying? I'm not scared to show love to the Jewish culture. I'm also not scared to show love.
But it'd be one thing if you were wearing an Israeli flag and eating a Palestinian food with no explanation and no context.
I would like to talk to the people that I don't rock with. Like, I'd be willing to talk to someone who hates black people just because. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would, listen, I'm going to protect myself. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I'm not going to put myself in harm's way.
Right.
Like, I'm intelligent. But like, if we can get in a situation where I could talk to you in a good faith conversation,
yeah,
without like the, I'm not trying to dunk on you. Let's talk, mm-hmm, man. So I actually want to say this publicly.
Hit it.
The Jewish plight and the black plight, a lot of similarities.
Oh, hell yeah. That's, I mean, we know that. That's, I got to get you looped into this stuff, man. This is, I spent a lot of time working on bringing our two communities together because we got so much in common, not just on that level, but like, historically, what we've been through, what we've built together in this country.
I just think that that's a space that I feel like I didn't hear a lot about that before I got into this space, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'd be a good person to start bringing that thing up.
Yep.
Just be nice to people. And then guess what? The world tends to show you good. I'm proving it. I'm proving it as we speak right now. Put the good energy out there and good energy comes back.
Yeah.
But if you're constantly looking for some bullshit, you're going to see it too. So I don't know. I just feel like that's kind of also my thing, is to teach that energy. The truth behind it is I'm trying to find new ways to build bridges and tear down invisible walls. Because at the end of the day, you know what I've noticed? I've gone to all these different cultures restaurants. It's the same stuff. It's people eating with their family, working to provide for their family, good food. Food's pretty much a protein, a veggie, and an apparatus, right? You either got the pasta, the tortilla,
Yep.
It's essentially
a vessel.
It's the vessel.
Yeah.
We all got a little spices on it for the most part. Yeah, you know, but for the most part, it's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're so much more aligned than what we think. And that's my job. And yes, I've been the food guy and I love food. So but I do think my thing is much bigger than food. I just know that food for me was a good entry point into what I really want to do, which is transformation.
Well, I'm definitely here to support you in that for sure, because we need it.
Here's a stat that I learned with Miriam, actually. He asked me, like, how many Jewish people do you think there are on Earth?
This is always fun to ask.
And I'm like, I don't know. Some crazy number, yeah, right?
100 million.
Yeah, right. Like a crazy. I said this.
Yeah.
And then he was like, bro, like 15 million.
That's it.
And then he showed me a clip online where this guy went around, yep, and asked people, and these numbers, it was always a crazy number. And I'm like, oh, so then you wonder why, of course, you're going to be a little bit more, like we're close to not being, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I understand the sentiment.
Of course, we stick together. There's not that many of
why
us.
Why would you not?
Yeah.
I mean, every other culture does it.
Right.
They just get mad at y'all for doing it. So it's like, okay, I'm willing to say things that are uncomfortable because I'm willing to go inside that cave that most of us are not. Mm-hmm. So if I'm willing to, even in the beginning with the hey, fill in the blank people.
Yeah.
Like if I'm like in public and I'm making a video, I would feel kind of weird, right? Because I know that if you don't know,
right?
Like, and people have DM'd me, don't say that. You shouldn't say hey, white people. But then when you think about it logically, what's wrong? Or do you not classify as white?
Right. I mean, it's what you are if you're, you know.
It's preconceived notions of what you think is going to come after that statement, right?
Right, right.
So anyone who watches my content after the hook, which is I understand life, it's a hook. That's mm-hmm. why it's called a hook.
Yeah.
Oh, anybody with half a brain is like, okay, no.
No, he's doing a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing and it's working.
Yeah. All right. So We're going to bring it on home here. We're getting to the end. Usually what I do, I end the show with a lightning round. But I'm going to do something a little special with you because we got a special guy here. So I made up a little game here. The game is called House It, Taste It, or Toss It. Okay. I'm going to give you three things. In the food world, you say if you would house it, just taste it, or toss it. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. House it, taste it, toss it.
I would toss lunch.
Yep.
I would taste breakfast, and then I would house dinner.
We're aligned on that, my friend. All right. Challah, plain, raisin, chocolate chip.
Raisin, I would toss it.
Yep.
Plain, I would taste, and chocolate, I would house.
Okay. I would flip the chocolate and the thing, but oh, raisin's gone always.
Yeah.
All right. Hamantaschen, and I know you've tried Hamantaschen, right?
Okay.
Filling, chocolate, apricot, berry.
What berry?
Good question. I couldn't decide. I was like, shit, do I say strawberry or raspberry? So I'm just going to say berry. So dealer's choice.
All right. Apricot number one. I'm housing the apricot.
Oh, interesting.
Housing it. Like even rugelach. my favorite have
it's
been.
It's the apricot, huh?
It has been my favorite of all those. Berry might be the toss. Chocolate would be the.
The taste.
No, you know what? I'd probably toss chocolate now that I think about it in Hamantaschen.
Okay.
In Hamantaschen, and then I'd probably keep the berry. I think in the Hamantaschen, I think I like the fruitier ones.
Okay.
Or the poppy seed, which shockingly I like.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Corned beef, pastrami, and roast beef.
That's brutal. roast beef, I would house.
Oh.
Pastrami, I would house.
You're just housing all of them?
I actually would house all of them.
There you go. Triple decker sandwich. Sorry.
I would throw away the roast beef.
Yep.
House the pastrami.
Yes.
Taste the corned beef.
Correct answer. babka, rugelach, and sufganiyot. Oh,
we already know.
Okay.
Even if it wasn't you, I would never say.
You can never besmirch the babka.
I'm housing babka.
Okay.
Which is actually funny because kokosh.
What's that?
I love when I know more Jewish stuff than
kokosh?
Kokosh cake?
I don't know it.
It's like a babka on steroids, and it's like less bread, all ridiculous.
Is it as like wet as good babka?
Wetter.
Oh, shit.
More wet.
You've been gatekeeping the kokosh from me? All right. Wheat bread, rye bread, pumpernickel.
Wheat, I would throw away. Rye, I would house. Pumpernickel, I would taste.
Nice.
I could probably house pumpernickel from Cheesecake Factory.
Okay, I got a little tip.
I got a tip for y'all. I used to work at the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, okay.
When you go to Cheesecake Factory and you get the bread with the butter,
yeah.
Ask for the recycled butter.
What does that even mean?
It's the butter that like
it was
you
from
take
the last table,
and so it's not like
it's already
brick.
Softer.
Yes, that's a low key little trick. Because if I liked you, I'd be like, I got you. and I would get you the good stuff.
That's a bonus for everybody who stayed this long through the episode. You got
that.
And
gatekeeping the butter.
There you go. This was meant to be an opinion thing, but you're also acing it, just so you know. Coming up right after this airs is a holiday called Shavuot. Have you heard about this one?
I just made a video that went crazy about it.
About Shavuot?
About a delicious babka cheesecake from a place called, shout out to Lilac and Cream.
Y'all look at this and tell me it doesn't look insane.
Ooh.
Wait,
it's a babka cheesecake or a cheesecake babka?
Bottom layer babka. And they like found a way like to make like little swirls at the bottom. Cheesecake and then like some crazy, ridiculous.
Whoa.
The video went crazy. They sold out overnight. You know how many non-Jewish people hit me up? I was like, bro, I gotta have that.
Yeah, it sounds like the most delicious thing of all time.
No matter who you are, that's a perfect, and I realized, and I learned because of the holiday, that's why it's a big thing.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Shavuot is, it means weeks in Hebrew, because it's like at the end of these weeks, it's this harvest festival tied to the agricultural season in Israel.
It's got nothing to do with like the end of Passover or something?
Yeah, so you count from Passover these 7 weeks to this date, which also it basically is like the birthday of the Jewish people. It's like remembering the day when the Jews and God were at Mount Sinai and God like made the covenant with the Jewish people. And there's a lot of different customs of why you eat dairy. It's like not a law, it's a custom thing, because they were like innocent as newborns when they got this new thing, and newborns drink milk, or there was too much work to do butchering and eating meat, so they just like only ate dairy.
Is that like a lot of the kosher laws and stuff based on like older rules back then where it was like not safe to do certain things?
Yes, that's part of some of those too, for sure. Like that's some of why you don't eat like the shellfish. They're like bottom feeders. They were just like gross fish.
Yeah, but not now it's considered a delicacy to a lot of the world. Right? That's interesting.
Yeah, which is why I don't keep kosher. So here's the Shavuot trio. Blintzes, kugel, and cheesecake.
Kugel I'd probably house, believe it or not.
Somebody just asked me in something I did this week, like, what's your favorite Jewish food? And I said, my mom's cheese kugel.
Yeah, I would say I would house that.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other two again?
Cheesecake and blintzes.
I would probably taste the cheesecake
and
throw away the blintzes. But blintzes are good, too.
You know what I learned today about blintzes is that, you know, so it's a crepe, basically, rolled up around cheese or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's rolled to resemble a Torah scroll.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I learned
today.
The more you know. I was researching for this. All right. Last one. Different from the game, but we ask it of all of our guests. Challah. Do you rip it or do you slice it?
I've done both. But if you ask me what I prefer.
Yeah, what feels right?
Ever since I did that challah judging competition. So like I which is
sounds like a great time. It's hilarious.
And then they were like, no, just literally grab it. So I think I'm a grabber now.
Now you're a ripper.
Yeah, I'm a ripper now.
All right. My man, Chris, thank you so much.
I appreciate this, man. I had a good time.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
This conversation, I like you, man.
I like you, too. We'll do it again around the Shabbat table.
Hey, you said it all. You got it publicly in there. We got to do it. All right, brother.
Mark it. That was delicious. Thanks to our friend Chris. Follow his adventures at Chris Cares None on IG and TikTok. Another big thank you to our friends at Bereka's Sephardic Pastries and Avi Q. We'll have more info on them in the show notes for sure. To those who celebrate Chag Shavuot Sameach, happy week's holiday. Hope you all get some good all-night Torah study. Let me know what you learn. All right, I'm stuffed. Roll me out of here. I'll see you all for the next scrumptious episode of Being Jewish with me, Jonah Platt.
Big ups to everyone who makes this show possible every week. My executive producer, Matthew Jones, story producer, Sean Liviashvili, and editor, Mike O'Brien of Rainbow Creative. Consulting producer, Bethany Mandel, research associate, Samantha Greenwald, my amazing executive assistant, Josie Rothschild, social media manager, Yuval Yosha, and graphic designer extraordinaire, Noah Bell. Most of all, thanks to you, dear listeners, who even stuck around to listen to all these credits. Man, I freaking love you guys.